Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Cheese and pickle.
All of television history is contained in the Box of Delights. Hello, I'm Julia Rayside. Each episode, my guest chooses a favourite TV memory to talk about. Joining me today is the comedian and Blue Peter badge owner, Tom Burgess.
Tom, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for coming. So what have you brought today to talk about?
So I have brought a clip of Blue Peter in 1999.
Love Blue Peter. Can I just say I've noticed you're wearing a badge rather ostentatiously?
Yeah. Oh this. I forgot I even had it on. Oh, thanks for bringing it up, though.
That was really nicely done. Well done.
Yeah,
Now, what vintage is that? Is that yours and did you win it? Obviously, you shouldn't be wearing it if you didn't.
I earned it fair and square.
Well
it
done.
It is modern, though, so it's not as cool as it could be because I've earned it as a grown-up.
Tell how.
Well, I mean, for all I know, you won't be able to put this on. It probably goes against BBC policy, but I work there at the moment.
You stole it. Fine, that's
okay.
I did not steal it.
But one Christmas, they needed a Santa, and I had the deepest voice in the office. And that is how I got this badge.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding.
So hang on. When Blue Peter was still filming in London or up in Salford?
No, it's up in Salford. So I live in Manchester now.
So you were there. You were literally in the office with a deep voice. No beard or, if I may say, pot belly.
No.
But they needed someone to dress up as Santa.
I was far too small for Santa as well. Surely he's a giant. I feel like you picture
he is
a tall man.
Yeah, it's like Hagrid, but
yeah,
with a whiter beard.
And I'm a sort of average height boy.
You're just a guy.
Yeah. But I still got it.
That's incredible. So did you have to wear padding and things?
Yeah, there was this enormous fake pot belly,
yeah.
which this was live as well, and it started
you were on
sliding
TV
down.
Santa.
Yeah, and I was trying to hold this costume together as I was on camera. And at the end of the sequence, someone came up to me and went, "Are you okay?" Because I looked like I was really ill because I was just trying to hold myself in one piece.
How much of your face was visible? Was it mostly beard and hat?
It was mostly beard, yeah. Wig, hat, glasses. They painted my eyebrows white.
Did they give you lines or did you just improvise in a festive manner?
I had loose lines to go around. I got to shout someone out when their post was shown on the TV.
Oh.
So I got to give a shout out to Ava Grace in Manchester.
That's nuts. I probably watched that because I sometimes do still watch Blue Peter.
Oh yeah, I mean I love the ones when they're in a big studio like that because it's now the studio they use quite often is a lot smaller
than it was. It's tiny, isn't it? I've sat in it. It's miniature.
I know, it's like they've taken the old studio and put it in the wash by accident.
Yes, it's
so small.
But every now and then
they go into a big one.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's really lovely to see that again, especially when it's full of kids because it's like walking into a massive assembly from when
yes.
you were like five and suddenly that atmosphere is exactly the same as it was.
Yeah, 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 completely. With like more funky teachers.
Mm,
so anyway,
yes.
We'll go back to your choice. So this is an episode of Blue Peter from 1999.
It is.
Now, this is significant because obviously Doctor Who is ubiquitous. Doctor Who is everywhere. We all talk about Doctor Who. It's on TV, mm-hmm. on and off all the time. In 1999, it just wasn't on telly.
Yeah, this is about 10 years after it's been cancelled.
Yes.
And I need to give some more context to this from my point of view
as well.
Because I got into Doctor Who, so I was born 2 years after it had finished.
Yes.
But one of my earliest memories from when I was four is watching Julia Roberts' brother beat up Paul McGann.
Oh, so the Doctor Who film.
Yeah, so
was
I
that
saw
on
that.
TV or in the cinema? It was on TV.
That was on
it?
TV, yeah. Okay. And I remember watching Eric Roberts beat up Paul McGann.
I didn't realise Eric Roberts was in it.
Yeah, it's hard to
My
miss
memory
him.
Of it
he's
is quite
very, very camp.
Yeah,
very
no, I
camp.
Think I can't remember it that well now. I remember Paul McGann looking fit and fancying him, but that's
yeah,
about
looking
it.
Back, yeah, he definitely was. Yeah. Even fitter than Sylvester McCoy.
I mean, if that were possible.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So I vaguely remember watching this, and then Doctor Who kind of slips away, but I know it's there.
Yeah.
But then a couple of years later, my Uncle William died, mm-hmm. and we go to his house to just go through his belongings.
Yeah.
And on his shelf is loads of old vintage VHSs, things like Dougal and the Blue Cat, the 12 Tasks of Asterix, and...
What a legacy.
I know, what a legacy. But most importantly of all, from my point of view, a double VHS box set of the Sontaran Experiment and Genesis of the Daleks, starring Tom Baker. And that gets me hooked. Inside,
little light bulb goes on.
There are loads of little pictures in the inside cover showing loads of other VHS adventures available. So I start gradually picking them up from a second-hand video shop where obviously someone is really getting bored of Doctor Who and flinging theirs out,
and I'm
taking them all in. but no one else my age knows what this thing is.
Oh.
So then one day I
You're
come
an
home
outcast,
from school.
Tom.
Complete outcast.
I love this story.
Real misfit. So I go home from school one day and watch one of my favourite shows, Blue Peter.
Yep.
Starts as normal, opening title, zooms in on the CGI ship on this weird map of the world. Normal drum roll, but then suddenly cuts into the Doctor Who theme.
Yeah.
And I've got no idea who has done this.
Ooh. But did you think that the TV was trying to talk directly to you?
Kind of, yeah.
Yay!
And then I watch this episode unfold, and it's like someone has made a piece of TV just for me, aged, seven
so
or eight
perfect.
At this point.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
So
incredible.
The presenting lineup for 99, it's Connie Huck and Katie Hill and Stuart, whose name I can never remember, but it turns out is Stuart Miles.
Stuart Miles, yes, that's right.
This and they arrive in a TARDIS.
They do, and then they step out, and Katie Hill is, I suppose, effectively in drag. She comes out as Tom Baker.
Yes,
so as Connie Hart comes out as John Pertwee.
Oh, she is Pertwee, so I thought she was Hartnell. She's not, she's Pertwee,
She's got this lovely, velvety
the
frock
velvet
coat on.
The velvet suit, that's it. Yeah,
and then
I
think Stuart Miles is Peter Davison, which makes sense.
He looks most like him, I suppose.
Yeah,
it's fair enough.
And certainly don't adjust your sets. You are watching Blue Peter.
Oh, yes. We've borrowed this amazing little time machine. It's called a TARDIS. It's owned by Doctor Who.
And if you're wondering just who he is, you can find out more a little bit later.
Yeah, so they're introducing the concept of a show that hasn't been on for 10 years and won't yet be on for another. Well, 2005 is the comeback and this is 99.
This is 7 years
ago. So this is between the walls. This is, nothing is happening.
This is pretty much the halfway point, about.
And I don't even know if it was an anniversary. They were just like, we'd like to talk to you about Doctor Who.
Yeah, there is
and
absolutely,
so we will.
Yeah, there's absolutely no real justification for having this. Now, I've since read up about this cliff of Doctor Who, and the producer at the time, Richard Marston, was a big Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
And he, I think, like a lot of Doctor Who fans who by this point were working in telly, quite liked the idea of giving little nods to things when they could and just looking back at stuff they loved and their favourite TV memories to put them on anything that they were working on at the time. But I think the way they managed to fit it in was by using the increasingly irregular Blue Peter Cyber Cafe feature.
Oh, that's right. They all had, is it BBC Micros? They must have been BBC
Micros. And you've just got all of these people gradually plugging into the internet. And as long as you put the word internet in something, everyone will suddenly, any commissioner will suddenly go, oh, really? Yeah, well, so this is very relevant all of a sudden.
That was it. They cut to. It was kind of like a rockery, but instead of rocks, they were geeks, nerds, if you will. So but they managed to gather Doctor Who fans from around the country, young Doctor Who fans. And then they had them all sat around computers talking about, like, one pair of boys had built a website, quite an impressive looking one from 99.
It's quite good, given the limitations.
And there was another guy from Edinburgh who looked like he's in the Inspiral Carpets who ran or helped to run the fan club in Edinburgh.
Yeah, which is nuts. Just all these children just creating their own little societies.
And again, like you, not really the age to have seen it as children themselves. And they didn't know the joy or the horror, depending on what kind of Doctor Who fan you are, that was to come with, the reboot and everything. So it was just such an odd thing. They lived in this state of, well, we love it and we can't let it go, so we're just going to talk about it just to anyone and everyone. And it was such an odd feature. It was just people enthusing about their thing. And the presenters really not understanding. Katie Hill especially was just like, oh, dad's fault, is it?
Yeah,
oh, why do you like this?
That.
Yeah. So bizarre. But anyway, and they had like at one point, my favourite bit is the fashion show, the catwalk show.
Yeah, this little
villains.
Parade of all of these old costumes. I don't know where if they've just raided some old cupboard in TV centre, or if they've actually had to hire some out from.
I reckon it was the good old days
them.
Where they still had the costume store somewhere down in the basement.
Yeah, gradually
it was
falling
all.
Apart.
And we've got some of Doctor Who's scariest opponents right here in the studio. Meet, first of all, Cybermen. They come from the planet Mondas, part human and part machine. They've programmed out all their emotions, which makes them one of the scariest monsters in the galaxy. I always wanted to do this. Very nice to meet you. Oh, no, that's as far as it goes. Thank you very much. Just step over this way. Thank you. Just follow the line. Thank you.
I think they did that sort of once every decade or so. There's one for... I remember... There's some clip from 1983, I guess it would be, where they have this 20th anniversary parade of monsters as well, and they are properly falling to pieces.
Oh, God, they must be.
Yeah, there's some sea devil that's like only got one eye left of the original.
Off.
But yeah, everything's just falling apart. But these actually look in quite good condition.
Yeah, no, they do. They've got quite a few of them. Obviously, none of them speak. It's just people, actors, whatever. Probably people like you. You know, they're grabbed off the street.
Yeah,
like, could you dress up in this costume? And none of them get to speak, but then the Daleks come on at the end.
First of all, were the monsters which were faced by Doctor Who. The most horrific of those has to be the dreaded Daleks. Now, like the Cybermen, they were once humanoids, but a terrible war made them mutate, and they had to conceal their horrific true form inside these metal casings. I was terrified of Daleks, I have to say, but they were actually led by the demented Davros. Here he is.
And they do get to speak almost constantly.
Yeah, they take up pretty much the entire rest of the episode. It feels like they just bellow over every single.
Yeah, I think if you're in a Dalek, you do have a microphone in there, don't you? So you just, you know.
Yeah, I wonder what they were doing with that, and I also want to know who was doing the voice, because they definitely haven't hired Roy Skelton in or dragged him back off the street.
No, it was just someone who knew the word exterminate and said it repeatedly.
Probably you get a sense that someone is living their dream when they're.
Oh God! Can
out.
You imagine? Have you ever been inside a Dalek?
Never.
Is there something you'd like to do?
I'd love to be inside a Dalek. Yep. Nearest I've come is being... I used to live quite near Longleat, so I would go to the exhibition that they had there.
Yeah.
And that you could shout into a mic that distorted your voice.
Okay, yeah.
But that was all you could do. You couldn't get inside one. Weren't enough to go around, presumably.
I'd buy an app on my phone that let me sound like a Dalek, just to see.
Do you think there is one? I'll look into that.
Could you?
Yeah.
I'd like to do that. I don't know why, just because. But yeah, the Daleks do end up building their part up quite significantly, they towards the end
they
of
do,
the episode
they do.
But they do this parade of villains, which is quite there's a Cyberman, but he looks a bit wobbly. He doesn't look that menacing.
Must just be a bit wobbly. It shows there's a real art to being a Doctor Who monster.
You can't
just switch it on, you know. You have to really live that character.
Yeah, of course you do. Like, the body language, everything has to be, you know, menacing. But the one bit of Doctor Who history they do manage to wheel out is they interview Louise Jameson,
which is incredible. She just suddenly turns up, and I remember watching this at the time. She popped out of the TARDIS, and at this point I don't think I'd got any of her stories on VHS, but I think at this point I had bought the Doctor Who Book of Lists, which was clearly aimed at grown-ups. There was nothing. They were not making things that were aimed at children.
No. It wasn't a kid's show at that point, was it?
Anything I picked up as a child was aimed at people who were older than me, but I knew each actor had been a companion at this point. So when she stepped out, I go, oh, so that's Leela. And I hadn't seen any EastEnders, so I didn't really know. It was at the stage where I just knew someone had been in Doctor Who, and
that's
it never
right.
occurred to me they would have a career beyond that.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's like, it seems odd to see them pop up anywhere else. But she, so she was Leela, and who was her doctor? Was that Patrick?
She was with
Trouton?
Tom Baker.
Oh no, Tom
but
Baker.
She said Patrick Troughton was her favourite.
I know,
she had a soft
like
spot for
ow.
Him. Yeah, it was really harsh.
That is a bit. Maybe they didn't get on. I don't know.
Do you know what? I don't think they did at the time.
Really?
I think he didn't like the character that she played, but then eventually they became closer as time went on.
Oh,
now,
really?
Now they get on really well
and do
appearances together. But at the time, I think he really didn't like the fact that there was this companion who went around with a knife. And I think Blue Peter got into trouble for using a clip of her chucking a knife.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, because what was acceptable for kids' TV in 1977, apparently less so 22 years later.
Rather different. So at the end of this episode, I think the thing on YouTube, there's a clip of this where they've just compiled all the Doctor Who bits together, so the rest of the episode carries on as normal. But then the presenters and whoever else is in the studio, they all pile into the TARDIS at the end and kind of fly away. And then they leave the Daleks to do the coming up next week on Blue Peter.
On Friday's Blue Peter, the Earthlings will be
Yeah, it was. It was clearly one of the Daleks, whoever he was, going, "This is it. This is my big moment."
Yeah.
And he really delivered it with gusto. It was a delight to see this again. I was again still not really sure why this ever happened, but I'm glad it did.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it definitely helped solidify me because for the first time, I suddenly had someone else kind of reaching out and saying this weird thing that you like and no one else seems to know.
Yeah.
That it's okay for you to enjoy. And there are loads of other fans about my age, I think, who became fans off the back of this. So it had its own little part to play
in keeping
the show ticking over and keeping it alive.
There was a thing that me and my son watched over and over again. I don't know, whatever the last big Doctor Who anniversary was. Maybe it was 50 years.
Does that sound right? Yeah, it would have been the 50th,
And Blue Peter went quite heavy on... modern Blue Peter went quite heavy on this anniversary. And there's this guy, I wish I could remember his name, who's kind of their Doctor Who stats guy, and he made a whole song about Doctor Who, like a rap song with a kind of catchy chorus.
Oh my god!
And a video with his like Bon Tempi organ. And honestly, it's all my son and I used to sing to each other for just for months after that came out. It was fantastic. So the association continues, Blue Peter and Doctor Who, hand in hand.
Always intertwined.
Through time. Oh, thanks for bringing that. That was lovely. Before you go, could you just have a dip into the box of delights?
Yes. Who has the best TV moustache?
Tough one.
Yeah, let's have a think.
I mean, there's the obvious ones. There's Poirot. They're all detectives, actually. There's Magnum.
Do you know what? I hadn't even been thinking about all the detective moustaches. Poirot is... I mean, he's objectively the best, but let's go for...
He's got the cleverest moustache.
I still find myself drawn towards Basil Fawlty's, though.
Oh, no, nice one. Didn't think about him.
There's something of... Sitcom moustaches are pretty good. You've got Captain Peacock as well. A lot of good 70s moustaches, actually.
Yeah.
There's definitely a good
vintage. It was the time for stashes in the 70s, wasn't it?
For some reason, I picture Basil Fawlty's moustaches ruffled. If you can have...
Yes, I know what you mean.
It would suit him to
sort of
have a...
diffident and blowing in the wind.
Yes.
Furiously.
Yeah. Just boiling over with his neurosis.
Tom, thank you for coming. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find links to the YouTube clips from today's episode on our Twitter feed @BoxDelightsPod. Come and say hello. Bye.